Hey everyone, this is part two of our Best of 2021 episode. If you didn't listen to part one, it is out there, probably wherever you found this one. So go take a listen to that one first. Or don't, they're not really in order. Yeah, if you want to listen to this one first, that's cool too. Okay. Bye.
My next award is just my favorite TV show of the year. Surprise, me and Sir didn't overlap at all, but that's not surprising because I didn't watch anything this year. So I didn't watch Succession. I didn't watch Ted Lasso, which I heard was incredible. Mom's been raving about Station 11, which I read the book of, and the book rocks, but I didn't watch that. In Mayor of Easttown or Easton or whatever that show is.
I did watch
Eastmare.
I've heard that that's good too. So I'm going to talk about a bunch of stuff that is what I liked. Number three is Great British Baking Show Collection 9.
I think I know what your number one might be.
You definitely know what my number one's going to be, and that's my pick, and no one else is going to choose it, but maybe you. Great British Baking Show Collection 9 was awesome. It kind of fell in line with the video games, where there was like someone who was pretty good, but there were definitely moments where you were like, I have no idea who's going to win this episode, which was awesome. And the last episode had me teared up during moments. Number two is the first season of Invincible.
How did I forget that?
I loved the crap out of that show, and I started watching before we were recording. I started watching Legend of Vox Machina, and that show has given off some Invincible vibes. But Invincible,
totally forgot about that.
Hilarious, and the cast is just stupidly amazing. Yeah. And they talk about superheroes that I have no idea who they are, and their powers are amazing, and it is
real quick. Okay, Invincible is incredible, and I finished reading the graphic novel series right as I was starting to watching that. It was so cool.
I heard, like, so I am invested in a lot of the characters, and I heard that the graphic novel goes into their backstories.
Yeah,
and
watch
I'm all about that.
The whole
and
thing.
There's not too many shows that are just make me want to read a bunch of comics. It's awesome. Mostly, is it Monster Girl?
Monster Girl's great. Great character.
She sounds awesome. But number one has to be Bluey. Season 2. Nick's got it. Oh, it's quiet, but you know. Bluey is a show that we watch almost daily, but is about two little girls and their parents two little girl dogs and their parents they're just so fun. And every time I watch it, I'm like, these are my girls. Margo is Bingo. Charlie is Bluey. I idolize the dad, and they just, the way that they have these stories in that show that are fun for the kids, but then just super real, especially season two, super real for the parents. It is nuts. Like, it is silly and hilarious and sad and real, and it is awesome.
On my Twitter, this was like less than a month ago, I posted, do you guys remember the movie As Good as It Gets, when Jack Nicholson says to Helen Hunt, "You make me want to be a better man." I found a screen cap of that, and I just, like, with the text,
bandit.
me to Bluey's dad. Yeah. You make me want to be a better man.
Yeah, they're just, I mean, I know it's a cartoon and it's like unrealistic, but also they're just, they approach parenting in a way that I, being still a new parent, always strive to to be like, and then balancing the yeah. the fun and whimsical with the stern and actually teaching your kids stuff. And it is just, it is a bonkers show. Like, I don't know, outside of people who don't have kids, how popular the show, or if people even know what it is, but
so I don't know.
It's nuts.
Everyone I know who watches it is people who have kids, and they started watching it because they're kids. But I mean, earlier today on Facebook, I saw somebody. Oh no, my friend from med school, Michelle, posted like, Michelle's watching Bluey, and the first comment was from somebody I don't know, and they say, we watch this all the time, even when the name of their child is not around.
Yeah. Yeah, it is that rare show that is not, doesn't melt your brain when you're watching it with your kids
repeatedly. Yeah,
things
yeah.
like Cocomelon exist, and Booba, and all these horrible, annoying things. And,
I actually find Booba kind of entertaining.
But Booba's
okay because it's not like there's no dialogue and voices or anything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess I just don't get it. I'm constantly impressed with the animation of it, but
It's anime.
Yeah, it's like a Russian, I believe, show, but it's on Netflix, and it's just like a little monster that causes trouble.
Yeah, there was a thing that was like Teletubbies long time ago.
Really?
Yeah, they were like people in big like puppet suits, and similarly, they never really said anything. They would like do weird. I found out like. It was supposed to be like an exercise show for really little children, that they were supposed to get up and do like the little motions.
Nice.
Like the critters were doing.
Wait, this is the country of origin is from United Kingdom. No, the one I'm talking about. That's all the names in it are Russian.
I was gonna say, I remember you mentioning Russian, but I like never really was invested enough to look into it. And as if Bluey wasn't great enough, it is from Australia, so everyone's got Australian accents, and it is just so charming.
Yeah. He refers to a barbecue as barbecue.
Barbecue. And does she call the bathroom the dunny?
she has before.
Nice. Eva, what would be your next award?
My next award overlaps with Sir's last award. I have Fight of the Year. My Fight of the Year is Charles Oliveira's title win over Michael Chandler. I'm going to let Sir take the wheel on some of the like longer running and more significant, wider appealing aspects of this win. However, the weekend that this fight happened was awful. For me, that was the we had actually like scheduled to record, and I couldn't at the last minute. I had to euthanize my pet unexpectedly, and I was sick, and it was just miserable. And I almost didn't want to watch it because I felt like I can't take one more thing going wrong this weekend, including Michael Chandler being a champion. Like, I can't handle it. I didn't even want to watch it. And it worked out. I really needed a win, and it happened, and it happened in a really like it wasn't a decision win. He didn't like eke out a win. He was almost finished and came back and knocked him out. It was wonderful. And maybe feel like, well, things might be okay. Sometimes things might work out.
I'm trying to think, you know, like Chris Pratt, how he's like really right wing, people think he's really friendly, or at least he had that for a while. That's kind of like Michael Chandler.
I don't think anymore.
The tide hasn't quite turned yet.
I think the tide has turned.
During Black History Month, they showed him and his black adopted child. Don't, you know, it just Yeah, let's talk. Let's do the white savior thing. It was just
awful. Because for Black History Month, we need to talk to Michael Chandler
and just a bunch of other stuff. So Michael Chandler has always been like just lightly right wing and kind of a loudmouth and terrible, and talked a lot about how his opponent Charles Oliveira, who's been fighting in the UFC since he was like 20, watching the kid's whole career. Chandler said he didn't have any heart and he was going to fold, and that he was lazy, and kind of a bunch of these tropes that you kind of say about brown athletes. And Charles Oliveira is from the favelas, brown skin, Brazilian guy, and is like known for his jiu-jitsu, essentially. He's known for his grappling. So the idea was that Chandler would be able to knock him out. And that maybe Oliveira didn't have the heart to like actually stand and fight with him. And it was one of the best moments. He comes out, he survives the first round. Charles gets knocked down and almost gets knocked out. He comes back in the second and he just knocks Chandler out in just spectacular fashion. And it was really special. So there have been a lot of UFC champions. I don't think there's ever been one who came from poverty to the degree that Charles did. So you all know, because you know, one of our favorite films of all time is City of God, and Charles is basically from one of those kinds of favelas. And that win, it was the lowest income. It was a win for the project. And he even said it. He's like, "This one's for the favela. It's ours." He held up the belt. He like ran into the crowd, and it was just really awesome. Dana White really wanted him to lose because he wanted a more marketable light champion. And Charles like jumped over the cage and like kind of like not aggressively, like got in Dana's face and was like, you know, "Hey, like I did it." Got blood on the boss, and went and danced in the crowd. Just a really just great sports moment and a big one.
We did shake some blood on it.
For the, yeah. To get a UFC belt. So yeah, am I up next?
My so you got another award?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're second to last.
Second to last.
Penultimate award.
Oh yeah, so this is best film for me. Okay, yeah. So I've got Yeah, penultimate is best film, and I've got two runners up. Werewolves Within, starring, it was really fun movie.
And oh, that was good.
Like, what I really liked about it was it worked within its budget. It had two actors, Sam Richardson and Milana Vantrub, who are kind of, and Milana is a television person. A lot of people know her as the AT&T woman. And Richardson, it looked like, had mostly just done like Comedy Central, Netflix and stuff. Really great roles.
Oh, he's one of the main guest people in I Think You Should Leave, which is like one of my favorite things. And he was in a great show for a couple seasons called Detroiters with Tim from I Think You Should Leave. That is it's like pound for pound, maybe the funniest show I've ever seen. It's really good. He's so funny.
Yeah. So it's a video game adaptation. So Kyle Gannon, check it out. And yeah, just really great to see two actors who are coming up that are like kind of filling the void. Sam Richardson kind of reminds me of Affectado, both on how he actually looks and also on how he carries himself. He's got that kind of like quiet intelligence you can't push him around.
Is it a horror comedy?
Definitely a core, probably a comedy horror. Like they go really strong on the comedy, which is
fair. Okay.
It is a like a comedic murder mystery that might have horror.
What is this again?
Werewolves Within.
Yeah.
And that's a game. It's a game.
It's based on a game that came out in 2016 for Oculus Rift.
Okay.
That was like kind of a Clue style game, only it's Who's the Werewolf.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and I mean the game I guess is set in medieval times, so they really changed around a lot. It's in a small town in Vermont. So the next runner up is Judas and the Black Messiah. A film that there's some flaws, and I'm as listeners of this program know, I've been a fan of Fred Hampton for a long time, kind of grew up on his writings and his work and stuff. And I think, I can't remember what year it was that I put his, the Murder of Fred Hampton documentary pretty high on one of our lists. This probably, people should probably watch that movie alongside this one. There's some historical failings, yet what can you expect from a movie that's meant to be fairly mainstream about like one of the most radically socialist public figures we've ever had.
They go a lot farther than I thought they would.
Exactly. And that's why it's on my runner-up list, because even though it's heavily commercialized, this is also a film that was made cooperation of his family that has some really great moments in it that really capture the feeling of those times. And I think it's clearly driven a lot of research into who he really was. And Fred Hampton's not one of those figures that, I mean, it's going to take somebody one speech or one transcript of a speech to realize what they missed out on in the movie. Like, he's pretty hard to hide what he was really about. And I think that was really cool to like get some exposure on that. And Clea did a great job. And
I think he's fantastic in it. Yeah.
Number one film, The Green Knight. And what is the name of the director? Escape me. David Lowry.
Lowry.
Yep. David Lowry, who also did Ghost Story, which I didn't like as much. Nick, you loved it.
Big Ghost Story fan.
Huge fan of The Green Knight. Huge fan of Arthurian mythology and the movie Excalibur. And I think this is like a really worthy sequel to that. It's also got a lot going on for it with like psychology and its understanding of mysticism, especially like Christian mysticism. And also like sexuality. I think it's important. It's one of the few films that I've seen that has this much to say about male sexuality in the whole spectrum of whether it's like hetero, queer, just the real psychology of who men are. Sexual beings, it's like spectacularly progressive to me, because it's, you know, so much of our content like that is like, or analysis like that is so binary and with our toxic masculine culture. But just that movie had so much to say and visually beautiful, and like had moments in it that were so like visually affecting, like the scene with the giants. I almost kind of like recoiled from the screen. I was like, this is like really intense when he's basically tripping balls. Just a great movie. Nick.
Yeah, I like those giants.
Yeah. Very cool.
I feel like The Green Knight didn't get enough marketing behind it.
That was,
it was a rough one. How big it was. Like I know nothing about it despite it having a lot of big people in it.
Yeah. I mean, the trailer came out and, you know, 2019, it was supposed to be, I felt so bad for him. I actually thought, I wondered if the movie would even get finished because they had a lot of
apparently it was finished. And then he spent like the whole first year of lockdown re-editing it, cause he like wasn't happy with it. And he totally like remade it, nice. In post. And I don't know. I'd be curious to see what he started with, but I really like how it turned out. Mm-hmm. It's also a pretty small, like it's a surprisingly small budget movie. Wikipedia has it listed as only a $15 million budget.
Wow.
Like, yeah, I know, this movie looks great. Yeah. Like I'm surprised it is that small.
That's kind of incredible.
I would have believed 10 times that. Other than I know that it like it was made by A24 and it's this guy who has made only small movies before. But other than that, like just to look at it, you would think that it would be a much bigger movie.
Yeah, and like with what Kyle said, like I thought I knew
nothing about it.
A lot about it. I didn't think I knew a lot about it. I thought I knew what it was going to be like. And then going in, it was like, this is not what I was expecting. I had a really weird experience with it. Like, I wasn't altered in any way chemically. There was just the imagery of it was just like deeply disturbing to me and really scary to the point where I felt like a couple times, like, I don't know if I could finish this movie. I was like really freaked out by it over and over again. Yeah.
Well, like, I don't know what to expect as far as like a Game of Thrones experience, a Lord of the Rings experience. You're mentioning giants.
Have you seen Excalibur?
I would have said almost like a more of a Eraserhead or
The Witch. It's very similar to The Witch.
Sort of a Witch reunion. It's got the mom from The Witch and the dad from The Witch is the Green Knight.
Yeah, there were many like moments I found scary as much as like almost overwhelming.
Yeah, it was overwhelming in a way. But even like just the altered voices scared me from the beginning. It also reminded me of Last Temptation of Christ.
Oh, yeah. Like when the Satan talks to him.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, but and just like the way the sets look to me and that they exist in this time period that is supposed to be historical, but they do it in a way that it's more stylistic and it's not really historical. And what's interesting about that,
it's historical if you think of it in a context of post-Crusades. Like a lot of there was a lot of cultural overlap for like, I really liked that, how they dressed him. Like a lot of the knights looked like this is a knight that may have been in Jerusalem or may have had, you know, was the governor of some area of an Arab town and was starting to adapt some of their culture and dress. So it was like really it was hyper realist. The hype was actually really historical in a way. They just didn't really place it. I thought that was kind of neat. And that contrasted with or accentuated the fact that they had a person of color lead, which also would have been not so far from the truth at that time. My other comparison is the Holy Mountain, only there was less.
less fucked up stuff.
Yeah, like less frog killing.
It's also narratively got some similarities to Last Temptation of Christ.
Definitely.
Yes, certainly.
I like that movie quite a bit.
Nick, what's your number four?
My number four is best performance in a movie, and I'm going with, so when trailers for this movie dropped, this movie is Pig. Everyone thought that it was going to be like Nick Cage, unhinged as always. His pig gets taken and he goes to rescue his pig, just like it'll be John Wick, but with a pig. And really what this movie is John Wick, only instead of him going on a killing spree, he just gets very sad. And it's about him being sad that his pig has been taken. And it's a very, for the most part, understated performance by Cage, the kind that we haven't seen from him in a really long time. But he goes a little big every now and then, but not over the top big. And it's certainly all like in keeping with what is going on screen. But it's not the movie that you think it's going to be at all based on what the trailer. I mean, it's not even really the trailer's fault. It's just sort of like your own Nick Cage baggage that you bring to it. But he's really, really good in this movie. And then it ends up with what could be up there for a musical moment of the year. There's like a cover of a Bruce Springsteen song that gets played like over the end credits. That's very, very good. So if you guys haven't seen Pig, I would definitely recommend checking it out. It's not the romp that you think it's going to be if you're looking for a John Wick style action movie. This is a very like austere drama, but I would absolutely recommend it if you want to see some very quality Nick Cage work. Kyle, he's so good in it. Kyle, what is your number one?
My number one is just Game of the Year. Very interesting list. These games couldn't be more dissimilar from each other. And the last one, or the number three, I played at the tail end of the year, and it just snuck in because it was so great. Number three is Guardians of the Galaxy. A surprisingly amazing game that I think I enjoyed more than the movies. I think they nail the chemistry of all of the Guardians way better than the movies ever do. And people really like those movies. I like them, but I don't think I love them as much as everyone does. And I was worried that the game not having the same voice actors was going to be way different, but it was different in a really positive way. And the writing in that game is just really good. Number two is It Takes Two, which actually won the Game Awards Game of the Year. It is by Hazelight Studios, and it is...
Is it based on the Olsen Twins movie?
It is not, unfortunately. But what it is probably the best co-op video game ever made. You play as a couple who is going through rough times, and they need to kind of fix their marriage by cooperating.
Yeah, it was a
But it is a game that needs to be played with two people, and it is just, it's like five or six games in one because of all the mechanics that go on in it. It's like a 3D platformer puzzle game, but you're constantly switching up the mechanics, and it is just incredible. But my number one game of the year is Returnal by Housemarque. It is this horror kind of roguelike 3D action shooter game that is just over the top. It is just, I don't even know like how to describe it, because it bends so many different genres as far as being a third person shooter, but it's procedurally generated, and it has this really terrifying story of this astronaut that lands on this planet, and she can't escape this loop, and she's running into dead versions of herself and having to interact with them. And it is just this really polished game that very much takes advantage of the PS5 hardware as far as the controller feedback and the graphics and the look of the game and how it plays. It kicks your ass. It is this kind of game where it's very difficult, but if you're one of these people that is sadistic enough to overcome being kicked and defeated constantly, if you're able to overcome that, it is a very special experience. So Returnal is my favorite game of the year.
Nice.
Eva, what's your last award?
Last award, Hungarian Horse Film of the Year.
Oh,
a very broad category.
Oh, so funny. When Evie was asking me the other day, what's the difference between a TV show and a movie? She was asking about how long they are. I'm like, well, TV shows are usually like 30 minutes and movies are more like 90 minutes. And she's like, really? And I'm like, yeah, sometimes they can be longer.
Boring shit you watch.
Yeah, I said sometimes they can be longer, like 100 minutes. She's like, whoa. And I was like, some movies are like 400 minutes. And she's like, whoa, what kind of movies are those? I'm like, those movies are Hungarian. She's like, oh, Hungarian movies? I'm like, yeah, they're all 400 minutes long.
I don't know if this one, I don't think this one was even like a... I don't think it was over 2 hours. And it was originally made in 1981, but I think it was just released like with English subtitles either in 2020 or 2021. It's Son of the White Mare, and it's
animated. I've heard of that. One of my friends was telling me that it's awesome.
It was amazing. And it's a folktale. It's a Hungarian folktale. And it was just, the animation of it was so beautiful. And it's not even like, it looks like it's rotoscoped, a lot of it, but it doesn't look the same as like our rotoscoped from the same time period. The colors in it are so vivid, and it's just really like nothing I had really seen. And there weren't really a lot of movies I watched this past year. Green Knight was the most recent one, and this one, and where I really felt like immersed in a movie, in a story in that way. and Son of the White Mare was amazing. And I know it's on Canopy. And I can't remember if it was, I think it was Criterion Collection, or maybe it was HBO.
Yeah. I think it was on Criterion. I think it was on Criterion.
Thank you. And it's on Canopy also.
Yeah. So the I was just looking this up. Where I had remembered, I knew somebody had done a Blu-ray release of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the company that did a Blu-ray release of it is a small Blu-ray company called Arbelos Films. And the big thing that they put out in the last couple of years was Satan Tango, which is the by the director of the Hungarian Horse movie. This is the one that is actually 400 minutes long.
Oh, well, there you go.
So they're related in that way. So that makes me want to see it even more.
Yeah. I don't know if I feel like there might have been some subject
it might matter be too much. Animation yeah.
that was not exactly fit for children. However, I am not a good judge of those things.
Sure. So. Sure. 432 minutes is how long Satan Tango is.
Well, I think, you know what? It's funny to me. Like, the thing that I think of is like Hungarian surnames are really long, like it all just gets mashed into one word, and I'm like, is this like somehow like it speaks to their like, you know, process of like telling a story that it just takes longer because it takes longer to say everything. Anyhow, sir, what's your last word?
Man, what to call this one? You know, I had best political moment written down, yet it's really just kind of like best existential moment, just best moment of the year. Person of the year, people of the year, project of the year kind of thing. Runner-up is going to be that a sneak peek to the best thing of 2022 is going to be Ohio being flipped to the color opposite of red. I don't know how political we can get yet.
Never gone political on this show before, sir.
Sending current Ohio Congresswoman Amelia Sykes to these National U.S. Congress.
Former Akron. Classmate of mine. Have we ever talked about this?
FHS, baby.
Akron's going to Congress, folks. We're headed straight there.
So when I started at Miller South, which is the grade school that we went to, I started late. And I actually started like a couple weeks late into the school year. And when I joined, they gave me just her schedule. And then crossed off the last two blocks where it said dance. And they're like, you don't go to dance. You go to piano because you play piano. I'm like, oh, okay. But everything else was the same. So I had like all of my classes with Amelia for eighth grade.
Yeah, great politician. She's done a lot for public health in the area and very, very brave, very respected, very intelligent. And then Tim Ryan. It's going to be exciting to see us send him to the Senate. He's kind of, he's kind of like that white guy that, you know, that like, he's not completely perfect on all this political stuff, but he's growing and he'll punch a Nazi in the face. So I feel like that's somebody we should send to Senate. So that'll be 2022. That's a sneak preview. The greatest moment of the year, though, wasn't the insurrection attempt that was brought to you by MyPillow and Overstock.com and the wife of a Supreme Court justice. It was the defeat and of said
Jimmy Pesto.
And Jimmy Pesto.
Sorry, you were saying?
It was the defeat of said insurrection.
Okay.
What an incredible moment. I've been into politics and history my entire life. It's been just a recurring thing. Watching C-SPAN, talking politics with my parents, being involved in stuff. And I wasn't quite sure that when the insurrection attempt or coup attempt came to the US, it would be Al-Qaeda. It would be this this collection, the broalition of Trump's forces since they attacked the Capitol. And three things really stood out to me. The heroes, I should say, of this fight. For one, a cop, Eugene Goodman. What an amazing performance. I mean, what I loved about it was that when the photo first showed, like, came up of him, like, waving his baton at the people coming up the steps, everybody was like, oh, who the hell is this guy? Like, what a punz. He's not, you know, why doesn't he stop him? He's not doing anything. And then it quickly became obvious he had averted a mob from probably tearing at least Mitt Romney to shreds. And, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Mitt Romney yet. I don't think it would have been any good to, like, to have Mitt Romney torn to pieces on national television. So I think we...
Say what you want about Mitt Romney, but I don't want to see him eviscerated on TV.
Yeah, I don't know if we need to see him disarticulated necessarily. And, you know, all cops are bad. However, maybe this is kind of like a one of those Django things where he's like one in 1,000 cops. And, you know, I can deal with that. So then I think the next layer of just like heroism that was really just stuck out to me were the White House pages and assistants who grabbed the electoral votes, like the actual votes. A lot of people, you know, seem to think that maybe it was just this somehow expert, somehow well-coordinated mistake where it was just a riot that got out of control. Yeah. Clearly some of those people knew what they were doing and maybe even had been led in tours around the building, because they went right for the speaker's office and looked for the votes. And the way our votes work, all they had to do was just for one of those hillbillies to pick up the votes in their hands, and immediately that would have nullified them, because there's a thing called chain of possession. That would have meant that they were tampered with, nobody's vote counted anymore because they could have done something with it. And that would have thrown all kinds of things in disarray.
They weren't intelligent enough to do that, though.
Well, yeah. White House aides, low-paid interns, had the wherewithal to run back in the room, grab the box, and keep our system just rolling on for a little bit longer.
And... 4 more years. I think I'm more pessimistic than you are about the future of democracy.
That's the next layer that saved our country. And then the third one, it was so amazing to me to see this like coalition of people immediately come together, which I was part of that group, to just start cataloging and basically reviewing the hours of footage from that attack and looking for people who are in our own areas. So that's how, you know, there's been a lot of criticism about how slow the Justice Department is moving. I think, you know, if you're Black like me, you know that once the U.S. Justice Department law enforcement system gets on you, it's like a junkyard dog. They're fastened onto the right wing leg right now. So I think we should have patience. Yet at first, it seemed like nothing was happening. And it was so cool to see this like assortment of anti-racist activists and quote unquote Antifa and soccer moms and just like Twitter people, like essentially making a huge database of insurrectionists using like all the things we learned from America's Most Wanted. So that was really exciting. And it really kind of like helped cement, I think, in our country's mindset that, wow, MyPillow guy just tried to take over the Capitol, take over the U.S. system. So yeah, that was best moment averting a neo-confederacy. Nick, what's your number one?
My number one, with that in mind, best voice performance from a minor character in Bob's Burgers, I'm going with Jimmy Pest.
You'll never be able to pick him again.
Disappear? Like, is he on the run or what? I imagine he's under investigation.
He's got to be under investigation.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. He's going to go to the front.
Yeah. I'm surprised they haven't arrested him yet. Everyone know, like, when they're like, the FBI, has anyone seen this man? Everyone's like, yeah, he was on fucking Mr. Show and the Sarah Silverman Show. Well, yeah, we've seen this guy.
I imagine he hasn't necessarily been arrested because he's probably cooperating pretty heavily.
Yeah. It was one of those things where, like, I'm pretty sure that's Jay Johnson. I was like, I'm pretty sure that's him, but I'm going to look to see. So I went through like everyone that I knew who'd worked with him before on various TV shows, and none of them had said, oh, that's not him. You guys are crazy. So that's when I was like, oh, it's him.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely him. Not a single person is like, no, Jay would never do that.
Yeah, in fact, they were all kind of like, yeah, Jay would do that.
Yeah, after a couple days went by, everyone's like, oh yeah, he's usually pretty quiet about it, but he's a conservative nut job. No,
I'm on brand for his voice acting
career. Yeah,
that's what everybody said, is that the character actually would have was perfect for it.
Yeah,
he was like a bunch of business owners who were up there. There were like a lot of like middle to upper class people who were at the Capitol.
No, I'm rounding this out with best movie of the year. And the two movies that I went back and forth on before I saw my final movie, I loved West Side Story. It's the first movie that I've seen more than once in a theater since The Dark Knight.
Is it the first movie, first musical that you've even thought about nominating for Best Picture in a while? Ever? Maybe? I mean, outside of...
what was that in one recent, with the dance number?
Yeah, proactively Singing in the Rain. I mean, you'd love the crap out of that.
Yeah. Are you thinking of Sing Street, Eva?
No, I'm thinking of the Bob Fosse one, I think.
Oh, All That Jazz or Cabaret?
All That Jazz.
But what was the other one that you really liked that ended with some long dance number? Denis.
Demi? Do you mean Beau Travail?
Yes, Beau Travail.
That's not a musical though. Yeah. It ends with a great music moment, but no. West Side Story is like full on. You know, people are familiar with West Side Story. I think it's a full on musical. Steven Spielberg, talented director, gotta say.
Is that his first musical? I'm assuming.
So it is, though. We rewatched. I hadn't seen it in forever. Temple of Doom last night, and it does open with a musical number. So he's testing the waters with Temple of Doom, an entertaining movie that's bananas racist. So West Side Story was neck and neck with PTA's Licorice Pizza, which is just a joy of a movie. It's got really great performances by both Alana Haim from the band Haim and Cooper Hoffman, who's the late Philip Seymour Hoffman's son. It's very much like a hangout movie. It's sort of has a plot, but not really. It's mostly just like these kids hanging out in the 70s. And
it's not sad.
No. It's like them getting into trouble and pulling hijinks and shit like that. Super fun movie. Kick-ass soundtrack, like some of the best needle drops I've ever seen in a movie. But I watched a movie last weekend that supplanted both of these, and I think is firmly my number one. And it is a Japanese movie from an up-and-coming guy. I saw one of his other movies earlier this year, or last year rather, called Asuka 1 and 2, that I really loved. And this one is just as good. It's called Drive My Car. The director is Ryusuke Hamaguchi, and it is quite long, but it just zips by. It's 3 hours, but it doesn't feel it at all to me. It's about a guy who's a play director, and he's staging a production of Chekhov's Uncle Vanya in Hiroshima. And it's sort of about like the creative process that he goes through with his actors, all of them, not all of them, but it's not just Japanese actors. He has actors from different countries, Korea, Taiwan. One of the actresses is only using Korean sign language. And then his movies will display with like the subtitle, like, I guess it's not called subtitles, the translations projected onto the stage. But it's also about him dealing with the loss of his, it's sort of a spoiler, I guess, but the loss of his wife, who we meet in the beginning of the movie, and they have sort of a complicated relationship. And so it's about him. And his creative process as he grapples with that, but it's a really fantastic movie. There's a scene towards the end of the movie where the character who speaks in sign language is signing for like 3 minutes straight, and the theater was dead quiet when she was doing it. Like literally, you could hear a pin drop, not just metaphorically. It was very quiet. Like literally, if I would have dropped a pin, you would have heard it hit the ground. It is it's a really great movie. It's still kind of bouncing around theaters right now, so I don't know when it's going to be widely available. But man, what a picture. It's very good.
I know when you watched West Side Story, you were like dying to see it again. Is this the type of movie where you've seen it just once, or are constantly thinking about it? Or
so his movie from 2017, I think Oscar 1 and 2, I initially gave it 4 out of 5 stars on Letterboxd, and the more I thought about it, the more I liked it. It ended up being, I think, number 15 on my best new to me list from last year. So it toppled like I think 15 or 20 movies that I'd rated higher than it. And this is another one of those, like, the more I think about it, the better it gets. It's multi-layered. It's really fucking good.
I read a book a couple weeks ago that falls under the category of like, I think I enjoyed it, but I don't know if I really want to ever reread it again. And I don't know if I can recommend it to many people, but it's weird trying to think of like whether you recommend something or want to rewatch it over and over and over again. If you don't want to do that, if that's a negative to it or not. But I think there are certain movies and certain books and games maybe that you can experience once and be okay with it. But I don't know.
Yeah, no, this one I would definitely watch again. I think it's got a lot going on that you would get more from a rewatch.
Yeah.
It's Golden Trophy time.
I would probably say Green Knight.
I agree.
But that's only because three of you guys have experienced it. And
yeah, I was going to go either Green Knight or Dune,
Matrix.
Dune would be the other thing. I do love the Matrix for Resurrections. And yeah, sort of
everybody else.
I kind of want to go Matrix Resurrections because there are so many haters. Just like, fuck the haters, man.
And you know, it's like Larry David said, if this pisses any of them off, alienate yourself.
Don't be. No, it should be something that you actually enjoyed, though. Like,
no, I did enjoy.
Oh, no, absolutely enjoyed.
There's a part
you guys both enjoyed Green Knight more than the Matrix, and don't act like you didn't.
There's a scene in the Matrix Resurrections, though, that like it's just so good. Like towards the end, where Trinity does something that's so fucking cool. It was. I'm going to spoil Endgame a little bit. Have you guys all seen Endgame?
Mm-hmm.
You remember seeing... Did you see Endgame in the theater?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Captain America grabs Thor's hammer, and people went buck wild. And I'm like,
yeah,
who fucking cares? It's a hammer.
Right.
Oh, but yeah, you would...
But there's a scene in Matrix when Trinity does something that you didn't think she could do. And I was like, oh, I get it. This is her grabbing the hammer. Like,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Like, okay.
I want to give it to the Matrix. That's how I feel.
Why not?
Aww.
I mean, why shouldn't... Kyle, did you see it?
I haven't seen either movie, so really I'm just
I was going to say, that would clinch it if all four of us saw it.
And you know what? I was prepared to be going to bat for Dune.
I thought with this, of it,
but you know what? In my heart, like, it just feels right.
Exactly. I feel like Dune just wasn't very inspiring, and I loved everything.
Are you on Team Green Knight?
For the ending, I hated the ending of Dune.
I don't hate the ending, but I see sort of why they did it because it's a part one. But I wish they would have ended it earlier.
So many better part ones, though. You know what I mean? Like that one was so garbled.
I think if they would have ended it, before like the last set piece,
before they met up with
that
group.
I think it would have been better. And you have that as like, you have that scene for like 20 minutes at the beginning of part two. And then you drop the title card Dune.
Part two. As they're coming out of the ground.
That's how I would have done it. But I still really like the movie, but yeah, I just like so many people have been like viscerally anti Matrix Resurrections, and I'm like, it's really good. It's sort of like a it's a romance more than anything. It's right? a very sweet movie.
It's the movie we wanted.
Yeah. Well, it's the movie I didn't know I wanted, and then I saw it and I was like,
exactly.
Oh.
Yeah. The movie you need. Yeah. I guess it's the movie we never wanted because we didn't really want the Matrix mm-hmm. fourth film. However, when we got it, it was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Here's what I think.
Where does the Matrix, this new Matrix movie, rank on both of your guys' best movie of the year lists?
Oh, I don't
and
know.
Does it rank?
Yeah, I haven't gone that. I haven't gone that.
Best Matrix deep. Films, though, it's easily up there. I mean, it's top three.
It's two for me.
I'd say.
I just Matrix feel like if you guys both Matrix liked Green Knight more, I don't know why Green Knight.
I don't know that Here's I do.
Why.
Like Green
I know
Knight
why,
more.
Kyle, and I know why. Because, like,
they like to stick it to the man.
No, like so many other people of our age, the allegedly geriatric millennials, we are reverting hard into nostalgia. And yeah. So it only, in a way to me, even though I would have, you know, if I would have rather given an award to The Green Knight than The Matrix. Yeah. However, I feel like it is completely philosophically and aesthetically appropriate.
It's in the 2021 year of the Matrix.
To give it to The Matrix. And I would add.
Oh, yeah.
Recommended double feature viewing. If you haven't watched it yet, or if you feel like you need an excuse to watch again, watch it with Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah, I need to see that. Do you guys want to hear some breaking news from the New York Times app?
No, never again.
Quick, I'll just say that about the nostalgia thing. It also functions as a great commentary on that same millennial nostalgia.
Precisely.
Yes,
that's my point.
I think it's the most
2021 movie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Breaking news, Donald Trump was more involved than previously known in proposals to seize voting machines over baseless claims of fraud in 2020, accounts show. Ooh, I'm pretty surprised by that.
Also, I saw another breaking news thing. Check this out. So apparently a bunch of the archives that they got to, like, because you have to save every presidential communication you have. Even if it's just under layers of top secret, you know, red tape. However, some of them they had to tape back together because he tried to
tore them apart. Yeah,
tore
yeah.
them up. And I just thought, emails, dude? Emails. Like, that whole thing was allegedly Hillary Clinton destroyed all these emails, and this motherfucker yep. is scrawling on with crayon on pieces of paper and just tearing them up. But and it's like, emails. Just because it's dumber doesn't mean that it's any less. shouldn't be pointing the finger at him.
Cool times we live in. So, is it Matrix Resurrections?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eva abandoned me. I was gonna go.
I literally have no horse in this race.
That's why you're sticking on the one you're on. But I wanted.
Hey, you could be Knight. You could be on the Dune train, and I think Dune is my favorite of the movies.
I'm just predicting that I will like Green Knight more than Matrix, but
I don't know. Matrix.
I still need to see the third one before. That's what I was working towards over the last couple of weeks.
I rewatched all of them in anticipation of the new one, and I like the third one a lot more than people had made. Like, I didn't like the second one when it came out, so I never saw the third one. Rewatched the second one. It's fine. Like, I have some problems with it, but it's better. It's certainly better than I remembered it being in like 2013 or 2003 or whatever it was. But everyone's like, oh yeah, two's actually good, but three's still pretty bad. And I thought two was pretty good, and three was a little bit better. I don't know. Robot Wars.
Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah,
robots are cool, man. There's some great robots in Matrix Resurrections. I think you'll like it, Kyle. There's a lot of good shit going on in there. It's really fucking hard to follow.
I was gonna say, I feel like the last Matrix movie is for a very specific crowd, and I don't know if it's me, but I haven't. I mean, you were saying that you think that people are really hating on it. I thought that the reviews were, from what I heard, at least the reception immediately was relatively positive, but maybe just the fact that it died down quickly is a negative. I don't know.
People seem to, it's very polarizing. Yeah. Like the people who hate it are vociferously hating it.
Well, but that,
yeah, they're also a Venn is diagram.
That's just the internet.
There's a circle with the people who hated the Ghostbusters movie that came out, or the Wonder Woman movie that came out, or or maybe have strong feelings about the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision. I just feel like there, like there's like a group of people that hated that movie that hated it because the woman,
the Indians being, changing their name and their logo.
Such a central figure.
It
was misogyny.
Internet's all right. The worst.
2022. Looking forward to it. Think it'll be better.
I think it'll have some good, some bad. I don't think we're gonna have a recap of any of the stuff we saw at the Capitol yet. The U.S. is. I mean, talk about like draconian laws and bills. Jeez, man, what a time! This is definitely one of those moments where culture and shows like this matter.
Yep.
But before we sign off, quick round table of most anticipated thing for this coming year from all of us.
Oh, I got mine locked and loaded already.
What's that?
Martin Scorsese's maybe $300 million movie for Apple TV, Killers of the Flower Moon.
I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait. Anything that man touches, just give it to me.
I just watched Wolf of Wall Street today. Most of it.
What a picture that is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I love that movie. I love everything Marty does, honestly.
Yeah. Eric Holder is writing a history of voting rights that I'm kind of excited about. That's my boring pick. The Senate races. I can't think of much fiction or movies, any movies that are coming out that I really want to see.
Kind of a tie between the sequel to Horizon Zero Dawn and Elden Ring coming out, and they're coming out within like a week of each other, in like mid February. Horizon Forbidden West and Elden Ring. This month is stupid for games, and then the rest of the year is it's like a wasteland of nothingness. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I have one third one. So Francis Ngannou, UFC heavyweight champion, just defended his title. Yet he also had a historic legal win against the company, where basically he's the first champion to ever fight to the end of their contract. He might be able to leave the organization while holding the belt. It's all this convoluted stuff, yet the UFC is like a horrible monopoly and is in court for all types of horrible stuff. And it looks like he might be the first fighter in MMA to really change the pay structure and just like how sleazy that business is. And that's really exciting. That'll be good to watch.
Well, I'm almost afraid to talk about it because the last birthday I had that I was excited about numerologically was in 2020, because it was the same backwards and forwards. We know how the rest of that year turned out. So this year, my birthday is all twos. What? My birthday is February 22nd.
222?
My birthday is 222. Wow. But wait, guess what day of the week it's on?
It's like a Mayan calendar.
Tuesday.
It's on a Tuesday. My birthday is the most twos of Tuesdays that will ever happen. At least until like year 2222. So it's the last one I'm going to get to see. And I'm kind of afraid to look at it. I'm kind of afraid to think about it. But
what comes after Omicron in the Greek alphabet?
Right. Something with a two.
That's what's coming. That's what's coming up.
Yep. So I'm looking forward to, I hope that we're going to be recording more. I hope that, we're going to be, I have, you know, kind of been doing some stuff and been straightening stuff up mentally on my end. I've been reading more and thinking about more stuff. I'm looking forward to getting to have these kinds of discussions more often and more regularly. That's what
I need to read more. I agree with you there.
You guys all, Eva, do you have a Goodreads reading challenge?
No, Goodreads is hard for me because I feel like I can never start. There's too much to catch up on, like adding information to it.
Oh, okay.
You know,
Goodreads is something that I get addicted to every couple of years. But I do have a challenge this year as far as like reading books in it.
I feel like you could do the same thing with movies on Letterboxd.
I know. And that's what I was going to ask you as far as like organization. Goodreads is pretty good with like organizing your stuff. And I just got Spotify, and that's another thing that seems to be good with like organizing your.
Oh, you just got Spotify.
Huh? You just got Spotify. Now that you found out.
I know.
What is this?
I know. What year?
They're coming
is
after
it?
Joe. I gotta subscribe.
I had to drop Pandora like a hot sack of whatever.
Hot sack of shit.
Yeah.
Spotify shuffle, is great. Pandora is shuffle only, right?
Pandora Shuffle only, but I do like that it is a station and not like a playlist, like a finite thing of music. Pandora created a station for you that was always evolving. Spotify, their playlists are...
Yeah.
They might have 100 songs on it, but if you listen to that for a few days, like you're going to reach its end. Anyway, we're not talking about music.
Is that all?
Alrighty. Well, people know where to find us. We've got a little bumper that we can throw, courtesy of our buddy John Ducker.
Throw the real gross one.
Today. Which one's the gross one?
The real cockney, like real.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's not the gross one. Love the cockney.
I feel like that there's like a real clean one and then there's one.
Oh, it's more. Yeah, it's the dirtiest, like it's yeah. It's grungy, but it's not gross. That's a great accent if you can do it.
Yeah, we need to have him on. I've had him on a few times for our podcast. He's not shy of recording.
All right, any parting words? 2021, fuck off.
Yeah. 2020, there, get your shit together. We're not fucking around this year. I think that's the message.
Yeah.
2022, I should say, yeah.
Get vaccinated?
Yeah, everybody get vaccinated.
Get your Jesus shots. Christ. It's the only free healthcare we're ever going to get.
Seriously.
Dude, Ohio is like one of the worst ones.
Half of the people who've been vaccinated in Ohio haven't been boosted, something like that. Like, there are almost no boosted people in the hospital.
And yet there are that many people in the hospital.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in the hospital. It's been less the last couple of weeks. It's been a lot less compared to where it was like end of December. It was a whole lot. It was not a good situation. It's starting to get much better. But even so, like not a lot of people have been boosted or in the hospital for some reason, maybe because like that fucking works. So
I really don't get how Ohio is so bad right now.
I don't know.
It's like
our part of Ohio was like remarkably bad, and I don't understand why we're not that really notable. We're pretty like run of the mill, like in all demographics, like socioeconomically, we're not that much of an outlier in any. I don't understand it. I don't know. I haven't looked in a few weeks. I'm assuming the tide has changed just over time, but we need more people getting vaccinated and boosted in this state and nationwide and worldwide if you can get it. I don't know how easy it is in other places. Hopefully it'll be getting easier. It's kind of important as Omicron has shown us. I guess that's a longer conversation than we it's should like do
pushing,
it in outro.
Like, I know, like pushing an anvil uphill. I don't know. Yeah. This country. Wow. They got so mad at us for the defunding police. slogan, and it's like, you're mm-hmm. defunded education and look where we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, with that, I've been Nick.
Just don't talk about religion. This episode needs to come out.
I've been Sarah. I've been Nick.
Eva.
And Kyle.
And join us again next time when I'll be stuck on the tropes.
On the Tropes Podcast. TVtropes.org/podcast/onthetropes. onthetropes@gmail.com. onthetropes.redbubble.com. facebook.com/onthetropes. twitter.com/onthetropes. patreon.com. On the Tropes.